Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon. There are three distinct issues this court must decide in this case. First, as a matter of law, is Dr. Kathleen an at-will employee or an employee who was employed for a definite term? This court can conclude as a matter of law that Dr. Kathleen was employed for a definite term. But even if this court does not conclude she was, as a matter of law, an employee for a definite term, this court should remand because there are disputed issues of fact that the lower court erroneously decided on summary judgment as to whether or not Dr. Kathleen was at will. Second, was Dr. Kathleen entitled to 1 year's notice of her termination? Again, this court can conclude as a matter of law that she was entitled to 1 year's notice. With regard to that issue, CSU's actions speak louder than its words. CSU attempted to give her 1 year's notice of her termination, but after litigation began, said she's at will and we never agreed to give her 1 year's notice of termination. But in fact, at the time she negotiated her contract, she was giving up tenure at the University of Nebraska. She was coming to CSU, although she did know that she was not going to get tenure immediately at CSU. She needed some job security, so she specifically negotiated for, and CSU agreed to the 1 year's notice. And third and finally, the other distinct issue this court must decide is whether or not Dr. Kathleen can assert a claim for breach of good faith and fair dealing in this case. While it is true this is an employment case, the covenant of good faith and fair dealing is applicable to employment cases when there is a contract for a definite term, as in this case. Also, the covenant of good faith and fair dealing Dr. Kathleen is claiming in this case does not go towards her termination, which is normally when, in the employment context, the covenant of good faith and fair dealing is not applicable. Instead, it goes to CSU's promise to at least pursue tenure for Dr. Kathleen in good faith.
Excuse me, counsel, was that promise part of the contract that you're alleging?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why are you pleading it as implied, breach of implied warranty of good faith and fair dealing?
Well, the reason is, Your Honor, is that the administrators at CSU did not pursue it in good faith. Now, whether she obviously could not contract to...
What difference does that make? If it's a breach of contract, good faith is not particularly relevant, is it?
Well, it is if they didn't decide to pursue it at all for any reason. Now, clearly, Dr. Kathleen could not have guaranteed tenure in her contract because she knew and CSU knew that this was not a tenured agreement at the beginning. However, as part of the contract negotiations, particularly because Dr. Kathleen was coming from a tenured position, Dr. Frank and CSU agreed that they would try to get her tenure, at least pursue it for her. And so while it is a term of the contract, their failure to pursue it in good faith is also part of the contract.
Are you saying they breached the contract by failing to do that?
Yes, they breached the covenant of good faith and fair dealing, and they breached the contract.
And was that presented in any way prior to the date that you moved to amend the complaint?
Yes, Your Honor. In Dr. Kathleen's deposition, as well as in her interrogatory responses, that was specifically stated that they had failed to pursue tenure for her. One of the interrogatory questions was, describe all allegations of breach, and that is specifically one of the allegations of breach that was set forth in the interrogatory responses. So Dr. Kathleen clearly cannot be an at-will employee in this case. The definition of an at-will employee requires that that person be employed for an indefinite term. And the undisputed facts that were presented to the lower court on summary judgment show that Dr. Kathleen was employed for a definite term. The definite term was a 12-month automatically renewable appointment. Dr. Frank, CSU in its responses to written discovery, both admitted that yes, she was employed pursuant to a 12-month automatically renewable position. The fact that it's 12 months is important because that does not violate the requirement that there are no multi-year appointments for CSU. And the automatic renewal is also important because based on the case law presented in our opening brief, an automatically renewed contract cannot be an at-will employment. It's not an indefinite term.
Counsel, is it Mr. Wysocki?
Wysocki, Your Honor.
Wysocki. Is this a written or an oral contract?
It's actually a combination, Your Honor. The contract, as Dr. Frank admitted in deposition, includes the April 2003 offer letter, as well as the emails that preceded it and the discussions that preceded that letter. So, Dr. Frank admitted in his deposition that that was all part and parcel of the contract, and Dr. Kathleen said the same.
But as a matter of law, once they've reduced it to writing, what happens to the oral discussions beforehand?
Well, if it was a fully integrated contract, those oral discussions would not be part of the contract. This is not a fully integrated contract, Your Honor.
Why is that?
The writing is not.
Why is that?
Well, there is no integration clause, and it refers to prior discussions and emails in the letter itself, Your Honor.
And upon which terms in the written agreement are you relying?
The terms in the written agreement, for example, the emails that Dr. Frank sent that specifically articulate his agreement that Dr. Kathleen would be eligible or at least could be tenured in 1 to 2 years, the term that it is a 12-month appointment. Those are at least two of the terms upon which we rely. I believe also the salary was articulated as well, Your Honor.
Counsel, but why should your client's understanding of what her employment terms were create a fact issue when there's a certification form from CSU that clearly says that all non-tenured staff, and she understood that she came on as non-tenured, that all non-tenured staff are at-will employees, and then there's also the administrative professional staff manual, which is likewise referenced in the certification form, also talks about the fact that administrative professionals are at-will. So why should her understanding come in to contradict the very terms of those documents?
Well, the reason is because it's not just her understanding, Your Honor. It's clearly CSU's understanding. At the time of contracting, as well as even during dependency of litigation, CSU's understanding was the same as Dr. Kathleen's, namely that she was employed for a definite term, that is 12 months that automatically renewed. In addition, those documents, the certification form and the employee manual, came 4 months after the contract negotiation took place and the terms were understood by both parties. And the lower court referred to those documents without first determining whether or not the original agreement was ambiguous. And so we contend that the agreement itself is ambiguous because it says both that she's employed to a 12-month appointment as well as at will. Clearly, she cannot be both. So only then do you go to extrinsic evidence. And the lower court simply cannot pick and choose which extrinsic evidence or parole evidence it wants. It has to look at, particularly in the summary judgment context, all of the evidence, and all of that evidence includes the affidavits, the admissions, and the depositions. And it is that evidence that, at the very least in this case, creates a disputed issue of material fact as to whether or not her employment was for a definite term or at will. And the same goes to the concept of a 1 year's notice of termination. Again, she specifically negotiated for this. Even Dr. Frank admitted in deposition that as a tenured professor, you wouldn't just give that up on a whim. And certainly Dr. Kathleen, despite the fact that she was leaving Nebraska, which maybe you do, but she was leaving Nebraska, a tenured position, and she had been a tenured professor at Purdue as well before Nebraska. She wanted some security. She knew she couldn't get tenure as that security, so the 1 year's notice and the 12-month appointment provided that security.
So let me ask you, in my reading of the April 3rd, 03 email and then the April 4, 03 offer letter, neither one refers to 12 months prior notice of termination, my understanding. And I'm wondering, is there anything in the record that reflect that Dr. Kathleen wrote back saying, wait a minute, you forgot an important term that I've specifically negotiated, namely a 12-month termination?
There is no such email from Dr. Kathleen. However, the language in the April 4th letter that says the funding for the institute, including your position, will be verified 1 year in advance annually per our discussion, and those last three words are important, to Dr. Kathleen indicated that the discussion, which was in fact, hey, I need 12 months, 1 year's notice of termination. And so while that language inartfully chosen by Dr. Frank, which he admitted, that is the language that Dr. Kathleen understood, demonstrated that, yes, the 12 months notice was part of the agreement. And so then the final issue, Your Honors, is the motion to amend. Now, because CC contends that the motion to amend was futile, that issue is reviewed de novo here. And we contend it clearly was not a futile motion. While it is true that some courts in Colorado have articulated the notion that the covenant of good faith and fair dealing is not a valid claim in an at-will employment context, that is not this case. This case is an employment contract for a definite term. Therefore, the covenant of good faith and fair dealing applies. Moreover, even if this was an at-will employment relationship, the covenant of good faith and fair dealing here is not being applied to the termination of Dr. Kathleen's employment. Rather, it's being applied to this notion that, yes, I'm leaving a tenured position. It's very likely that I will be tenured at CSU, so at the very least, CSU, you need to pursue that in good faith. CSU had complete and total discretion as to whether or not it would pursue tenure for Dr. Kathleen, and it did nothing. And that is a breach of its covenant of good faith and fair dealing. If Your Honors are okay, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I am Allison Kyles of the Colorado Attorney General's Office. My registration number is 21368. I am representing the state of Colorado, the Board of Governors for Colorado State University, Anthony Frank and Lewis Swanson. This court should affirm the district court's order granting summary judgment and also its order denying Dr. Kathleen's motion to amend her complaint. The parties agree on the law. If her employment was for an indefinite term, then it was terminable at will by either party. We have to look only at the certification form, the academic faculty / administrative professional certification form, which is at CD page 182. Dr. Kathleen signed this within days of starting at CSU. She signed it on June 27, 2003. On its face, this document says it is the employment agreement. It's not extrinsic evidence, and there's no need to look at beyond this unambiguous document.
Counsel, let me ask in that connection, if I may. The plaintiff argues that two witnesses for the defendant admitted that this was a renewable 12-month appointment. And this that occurred in the course of litigation, as I understand, in depositions. Do you agree with that?
Well, it is an odd phrase because it's not non-renewable, but certainly it was indefinite. And contrary to Dr. Kathleen's position about the import of the 12-month appointment, the 12-month appointment differentiates Dr. Kathleen's appointment from faculty who have 9-month appointments. So again, it is really an administrative and payroll issue and a budgeting issue. It doesn't go to the length of her contract with CSU or whether it is renewed annually.
Is that an ambiguous term then? I mean, I understand that it's understood by CSU administration that 12 months is just distinguishing from 9 months, but many people might read that and think that it means it's an appointment for 12 calendar months.
Well, what's important is that she didn't get a certification form like page 182 in the record every year. So she was not appointed from July 1 to June 1 annually. She received one certification form at the beginning of her employment. And importantly, the duration is absent in that form. There's a blank where the termination date would be with an asterisk that guided Dr. Kathleen to admit that she was an at-will employee, which she did. So it's important that she had that form at the beginning of her employment with no termination period, and also that the second one she signed, which is CD-181, at the end of her period, does include the last day of her employment, October 31, 2008. So again, that tells payroll what to do and how to administer Dr. Kathleen's employment.
Oh, why shouldn't we conclude that telling somebody that you're on board for 12 months is inconsistent with telling them that they can be hired at any time for any reason? What if instead of being 4 or 5 years after the fact, what if in the first 12 months she had been told that, you know, her position wasn't going to continue? Would she have any kind of a claim in that event?
Judge Fox, because she was at will. The offer letter says that she's at will, so the offer letter is not inconsistent with the certification form, which is the employment agreement. And also, the certification form incorporates the manual, as you pointed out. And the manual is very clear that administrative professionals, like Dr. Kathleen, were at-will employees. So there's no real inconsistency.
Is there any issue that Dr. Kathleen amended the appointment document and signed it as amended?
The second document?
The appointment document, the one you're referring to, the certification.
The certification form, the first certification form she signed, you know, as I said, it guided her directly to the asterisks, which showed why the duration of her employment was not filled in. And certainly her signature accepts the fact that she was an at-will employee. When she signed the second form at the end of her employment, she did so under protest. But I mean, again, the filling in the end date was to let payroll know that that was the last day of her employment. So there was never an express stipulation about the duration of her employment, and I think it's clear as a matter of law that she was an at-will employee. She really couldn't be anything else, because at CSU there are only certain types of employment. There are tenured and tenure-track faculty members. We know she wasn't one of those. There are classified employees under the state personnel system. She wasn't one of those. And the only group left is administrative professionals, and the manual is clear that those employees serve at will.
What about Dr. Kathleen's contention that CSU acted as if she was entitled to 1 year's notice of termination of her employment? How do you respond to that?
Dr. Kathleen argues that Dr. Swanson agreed to pay her until October 2008 because it was a year from when they talked about funding. He testified to the opposite, and his testimony is at CD page 343. He testified that he didn't think she was entitled to a year's notice of termination, that he was just helping her through the transition. So that was his testimony. And even if the court finds that Dr. Kathleen was entitled to some kind of notice, the notice was about verifying funding. There's nothing in Dr. Frank's offer letter that required CSU to inform Dr. Kathleen a year in advance that her position was ending. There's nothing that requires notice, that the notice be in writing. And she admitted that she had a conversation in October 2007 with Lou Swanson. On page 10 of her opening brief, she cited Dr. Swanson's testimony and said that he told her that a major source of funding was going away. But if you look at the testimony at CD 342, he actually said a little bit more. And what he said was, question, so did you tell her in October 2007 that CIPP was being eliminated at CSU? Answer, I laid that out for her, yes. So her argument that Dr. Swanson didn't give her the right type of notice seems to be that he would sometimes say there's no money available and then funding would materialize. Well, that history doesn't mean he didn't give her notice in October 2007. And her hope or not taking him seriously also doesn't mean that ultimately she had noticed that there was trouble afoot.
Counsel, let me ask you, you indicated, am I correct, from your perspective, your client's perspective, the certificate is the contract and there's nothing else. Is that correct?
That's true.
And that was signed, what, a couple of months after she started?
No, actually, it was signed about 4 days before she started.
Okay.
Dr. Kathleen does argue that it was after, that it was months after the contract, but that's because she interprets the contract as Dr. Frank's April offer letter.
So it's your position that there was no contract in existence prior to that time?
That's true.
The signing of the certificate?
Yes. Certainly by November 4, when Lou Swanson wrote to the Institute's board and to Dr. Kathleen, this is at CD page 177, she was on notice. He said, "There is funding for this year. However, at this point in time, there will be no funding for CIPP in fiscal year 09. So the agreement, if any, was to verify funding, and clearly that was done in October 2007, in November 2007, and then again in January 2008. So the court should affirm the district court's order granting summary judgment. And with respect to Dr. Kathleen's motion to amend the complaint, the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying Dr. Kathleen's motion to amend her complaint because the proposed amendment was prejudicial. Again, we seem to agree that the Colorado Supreme Court's decision in Benton versus Adams guides the analysis, that if a party seeks to amend before you're very close to trial, that leave should be granted. But if leave to amend would significantly delay the progress toward trial, a court may deny leave and not abuse its discretion. So in Benton, we know that the case was in its embryonic stage.
But what needed to be done here? What would have caused the delay? She'd already been deposed extensively on this subject, I understand. Was there other discovery that hadn't been taken yet?
Well, certainly, if she had amended the complaint, we would have had to amend the answer. And certainly there would have had to be discovery done on new affirmative defenses, latches, for example. There would have been additional discovery on whether the alleged promise of tenure was sufficient to constitute an enforceable promise. I anticipate that there would have been another motion for summary judgment, and certainly that would have delayed the trial. So this case is a lot more like this court's decision in Sternbuck versus Goss, where the court found no abuse of discretion, where the case had been at issue for over 8 months, a trial management order had been entered, discovery had commenced, a trial had been set, the parties had submitted their mandatory disclosures. So clearly, the court didn't abuse its discretion in finding that the amendment would have been prejudicial.
Can I just ask you, did the defendants promise to pursue tenure for Dr. Kathleen?
It was not a promise. I mean, I think that the best they have is Dr. Frank's email, which I don't think is legally sufficient to constitute an enforceable promise, because he wrote, "We had also discussed the option of tenure. As I understand it, the involved college and department believe there may be options to move in this direction in 1 to 2 years, which is at CD 252 to 253. So first, you know, there's no evidence of a promissory intent. And second, it's speculation about career progression, which we know from Soderlund versus Public Service Company of Colorado is not legally sufficient to be an enforceable promise. It's true that there are jurisdictions cited in Dr. Kathleen's opening brief that find the covenant applicable in employment contracts, but they kind of fall in two general areas. One are cases where the allegation is that the breach is of some policy in a manual. So how to bring employees back from layoff, or how to administer personal progressive discipline, for example. Here, the manual says administrative professional positions are, quote, at will and do not lead to tenure, unquote. That's at CD 169. So there can't be any allegation that there was a breach of a policy issue. Other jurisdictions, like Delaware and other cases cited in Dr. Kathleen's breach, look for malice, fraud, deceit, misrepresentation, none of which are allegations that were contained in Dr. Kathleen's proposed amended complaint. And the overriding idea in all of the jurisdictions that find the covenant applicable in employment situations is that we not erode the notion of at-will employment. and that we not override the express terms of an agreement. So even though this issue doesn't go to her termination, there is an express term in her employment agreement, because it's in the manual, that says administrative professional positions do not lead to tenure. So, Your Honors, the district court correctly granted summary judgment and correctly denied Dr. Kathleen's motion to amend her complaint. The defendants respectfully request that the court affirm both orders.
Thank you, Ms. Kyles.
Thank you.
Your Honors, the definition of administrative professional that counsel just articulated, that such positions do not lead to tenure, directly contradicts the negotiations that Dr. Frank and Dr. Kathleen had at the outset. Now, it's important to understand the circumstances surrounding the formation of the agreement. Now, this all happens 4 months before Dr. Kathleen leaves Nebraska, quits her job, her tenure job there, and comes to Colorado. It would be as though somebody from an employer from Denver hires somebody from Washington, D.C., and they say, yeah, 12 months, come on in, and yeah, your position's at will, but 12 months, come on in. The guy moves, comes here, and all of a sudden is fired after 6 months. That's sort of what happens here. Everybody agrees 4 months prior to Dr. Kathleen coming to CSU that tenure is going to be pursued. It's an option that can happen. Yes, Your Honor, go ahead.
Say everybody agrees, that she just disagreed.
Well, Dr. Frank's statement in his email in writing to Dr. Kathleen at the time is that tenure is something that can be explored within 1 to 2 years.
But it said for now she's an at-will employee.
For now she's not an at-will employee. For now she's under a 12-month automatically renewable appointment that in fact did renew automatically every year for 5 years. And the course of dealings of the parties amply demonstrates that in fact what Dr. Kathleen was here is employed for a definite term of 12 months, each year renewed automatically.
Mr. Wysocki, so let's, I'd like you to analyze this with me. So we start off, the issue here is summary judgment, whether there's a genuine issue of material fact as to these issues.
Yes.
And the genuine issue that you're proposing is an issue as to what were the terms of the agreement.
Yes, whether or not, I mean, fundamentally, whether or not she is an at-will employee, and there are disputed issues of fact as to the terms of the employment, just as you said.
Now, we have written documents that relate to the employment. Is it your position that they are ambiguous and therefore we can consider extrinsic evidence, or what is your position as to all of this discussion that you're talking about, all this evidence? Because we don't find facts. All we have to do is find here whether there's a genuine issue about what the contract means.
Yes, as we've said, the contract itself is facially ambiguous. You cannot at the same time be at will and be subject to a 12-month automatically renewable appointment. And
now, what language do you find that says it's a 12-month automatically renewable appointment?
Well, the offer letter, Your Honor, states that this is a 12-month appointment with a salary of $125,000 plus benefits. In addition to that, as I mentioned earlier, if I may continue, Your Honor.
Yes, please.
Both Dr. Frank admitted in deposition as well as in the request for admission that it was a 12-month automatically renewable position. So a 12-month appointment, how does that work? Well, she was there for more than 12 months. Clearly, she was there for 5 years. So how does that work? Well, it's automatically renewed, which is what everybody agrees on. Therefore,
now, let's go. You're saying in practice, it did get renewed.
Yes.
And it got renewed without further discussion.
That is my understanding, yes, Your Honor.
And that practice then, are you saying that's an amendment to the agreement?
No, I'm saying it helps define what 12-month appointment is. How does that 12-month appointment go on beyond the 12 months? Because at the time...
Let's stop a minute again.
Sure.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, there's a genuine issue about whether there's a 12-month appointment?
Yes.
And there is evidence in the record upon which such an issue can be premised?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case of Kathleen against State of Colorado and others is now submitted for determination. We will issue an opinion in due course.